Have you ever wondered what it would be like to discover that supernatural creatures aren't just myths, but living among us? Elena Lawson's Shifted Fate has become a cult phenomenon among paranormal romance readers, with TikTok creators propelling it to bestseller status through viral videos about its unique take on werewolf mythology and complex love triangle. Unlike traditional werewolf stories, Lawson's wolves retain their human consciousness during transformation, creating a more nuanced exploration of dual nature. The book has drawn praise from fantasy author Sarah J. Maas, who called it a fresh take on werewolf mythology with characters who leap off the page. As we navigate a world increasingly fascinated with the supernatural, this story of a homeless teenager discovering her connection to a hidden world of shapeshifters offers both escapism and surprising emotional depth. Life has a way of pushing us to our limits, revealing strengths we never knew we possessed. For Allie Grace, those limits are tested daily as she balances high school with a job at the local bookshop while hiding a devastating secret. She's homeless, living in her late father's hunting blind deep in the woods. Following her father's death a year ago, she's been surviving on her own, creating an elaborate web of lies to keep social services at bay. Her aunt and uncle believe she's staying with her friend Vivian, while Vivian thinks she's living with relatives. The hunting blind offers minimal protection, a small camouflage tent perched in the trees, accessible only by a 25-minute hike from the bus stop. It's a precarious existence, especially as winter approaches. Each day begins with the same routine, waking before dawn, hiding her few possessions, and making the long trek to catch the school bus. Maggie, the elderly bus driver who seems to suspect Allie's situation, often offers small kindnesses, like the umbrella she insists Allie take despite the teenager's protests about clear weather forecasts. The fragility of Allie's makeshift home becomes brutally apparent during a violent storm that tears through the canvas roof. Despite her best efforts to patch the damage with duct tape, a branch pierces the opposite side, threatening her precious school books. As lightning strikes directly overhead, the massive tree supporting her hunting blind splits with an ominous groan. In a terrifying moment, the entire structure collapses, taking Allie with it. When she regains consciousness, she finds herself pinned beneath the wooden platform, her ankle throbbing. Using a thick branch as leverage, she manages to free herself, only to hear the unmistakable rumbling of a mudslide coming down the mountain. In a moment of foolish sentimentality, she returns for her father's photo, the only memento she has left of him, nearly costing her life. Just as the earth shifts beneath her feet, a massive white wolf appears. Instead of attacking, it helps pull her from the slide's path, even bringing her a walking stick when it notices her limping. With her home destroyed and possessions buried, Allie has no choice but to follow the strangely intelligent creature deeper into the woods, hoping it's leading her to shelter rather than to its pack for dinner. Following the white wolf through the darkening forest, Allie finally spots the orange glow of artificial light through the trees. As the scent of burning firewood reaches her, her body begins to give out from cold and exhaustion. Attempting to crawl toward the wooden cabin nestled in a grove, a strong hand suddenly grabs her, Jared Stone, a classmate she barely knows, standing shirtless and barefoot with strangely glowing caramel eyes. As Jared helps her toward the cabin, a dark gray wolf appears, snarling aggressively. Jared stands his ground, telling Clay to back off. The wolf eventually retreats, and Allie passes out to the sound of a distant howl. When she wakes in an unfamiliar room, she overhears Jared arguing with Clayton Armstrong, a former senior from her high school, about her staying. Clay grows increasingly hostile, his blue eyes seemingly glowing just like Jared's amber ones. When Allie attempts to leave, the argument between the two men escalates. Suddenly, both men transform before her eyes into massive wolves, Jared into the white wolf that saved her, Clay into a black one. Their clothes lie tattered on the ground as the wolves communicate through growls and posturing. When Allie cautiously addresses the white wolf as Jared, it acknowledges her with a nod. The black wolf eventually stalks off in disgust, and Allie breaks into hysterical laughter at the absurdity of the situation. In an instant, Jared shifts back to human form, completely naked. He seems surprised she's not more shocked, thinking she'd seen him shift the night before. Rather than screaming or running, Allie simply requests coffee and a shower, needing time to process what she's witnessed. Her practical response to the supernatural revelation speaks volumes about her character. Adaptable, pragmatic, and perhaps too accustomed to life's unexpected cruelties to be truly shocked by anything anymore. This moment marks a fundamental shift in Allie's understanding of reality. The world she thought she knew has been irrevocably altered, expanded to include creatures she believed existed only in myths and movies. Yet somehow, this revelation feels less threatening than her everyday struggles for survival. At least wolves have clear motivations, unlike humans, whose cruelty often seems arbitrary and senseless.
While adjusting to the knowledge that werewolves exist, Allie faces a more immediate threat, her ex-boyfriend Devin. What initially seemed like a promising relationship with a mysterious newcomer quickly devolved into something sinister. Flashbacks revealed Devin going through Allie's phone while she slept, accusing her of having an affair with Quinn, her culinary class partner. When she pulled away and told him he was hurting her, he struck her, a betrayal that left deeper scars than the physical pain. When Devin shows up at the bookstore where Allie works, she's terrified but stands her ground. He acts as if nothing happened, even examining her injured ankle with concern. When she flinches at his touch, he has the audacity to ask how she could think he would hurt her, insisting, "That wasn't me." This gaslighting, attempting to make Allie question her own memories and perceptions, is perhaps more damaging than the physical abuse itself. Jared arrives just in time, confronting Devin, who claims Allie is his. Enraged, she snaps back that she belongs to no one. After Devin storms out, Jared offers to let her stay at his place, saying she deserves better than what's happened to her. Allie thinks to herself that he's wrong. She deserves it all. This heartbreaking moment reveals the depth of her self-loathing, suggesting there's more to her story than just recent homelessness and abuse. Indeed, as the narrative unfolds, we learn that Allie carries a crushing burden of guilt. She believes she killed both her parents and someone else before she was even born. While driving with Jared, she frantically stops him from taking Lofty Pines Drive, unable to bear passing the graveyard where her parents are buried. The weight of this perceived responsibility has shaped her entire self-concept, making her believe she deserves whatever suffering comes her way. This pattern of accepting blame extends to her relationship with Devin. Like many abuse victims, she's internalized the idea that she somehow provoked or deserved his violence. When Jared's eyes glow with anger at Devin's treatment of her, Allie tries to make excuses for her ex's behavior, a heartbreaking illustration of how abuse warps one's perception of normal relationships. Despite her initial wariness, Allie gradually forms connections with both Jared and Clay. Jared's kindness manifests in small gestures, buying her new shoes to replace her missing boot, driving her to work despite her protests, and ordering pizza when he realizes she's been surviving on ramen and berries. When she asks why he's been watching her in the woods, he admits he first caught her scent 2 months ago and began checking on her regularly during his evening runs, making sure she got safely to the blind. Clay, though initially hostile, shows glimmers of humanity beneath his gruff exterior. When Allie curses colorfully after spilling hot coffee on herself, he seems surprised, remarking he's never heard a girl curse like that. She snaps back that she's not like most girls, refusing to be intimidated by his glowing blue eyes. This seems to earn his respect, and he later asks if she knows about bikes and cars. When she confirms she understands most bikes and older car models, but avoids computerized bullshit, his lips twitch in what might be a smile. These developing relationships offer Allie something she's desperately needed, a sense of belonging. At the cabin, she experiences simple pleasures long absent from her life: a warm shower, home-cooked meals, comfortable sleep. She and Jared discover they share the quirky habit of mixing milk duds into popcorn, a tradition her father taught her. These moments of normalcy provide a stark contrast to her previous existence in the hunting blind. Yet Allie remains guarded, afraid to fully trust this newfound stability. When Jared asks her to eat lunch with him at school, she panics and refuses, joining her friends Viv and Lila at their usual spot instead. She continues to lie about her living situation, claiming Jared merely offered her a ride when her friends noticed them arriving together. This reluctance to integrate her two worlds stems partly from fear of judgment, but also from a deeper anxiety that acknowledging her connection to Jared means accepting the supernatural reality he represents. As Allie grows more comfortable with Jared, her curiosity about his supernatural nature intensifies. During a quiet moment in his Jeep, parked at the edge of the forest where shadows stretch long across the dashboard, she bombards him with questions about being a wolf. His answers reshape her understanding not just of werewolves, but of the entire world, revealing layers of reality she never knew existed beneath the surface of her ordinary life. Jared explains they aren't werewolves like in movies. Silver doesn't harm them, and they aren't mindless beasts during transformation. Instead, they maintain full consciousness and control, though the wolf's instincts become stronger. His people were originally called Endurans, a separate race from a hidden land called Emerus, the Immortal Lands, before being cursed. The name itself carries weight in their culture, spoken with a mixture of reverence and loss for a homeland they can no longer access. When pressed for more information, he reveals there are other supernatural beings too, the ethereal fae from the crystal spires of Melorin, and the Vokari, what humans call vampires, who once ruled vast territories in both realms. He also mentions witches, ancient practitioners of magic, who he says were responsible for cursing both the Endurans and Vokari 1,000 years ago in a conflict that reshaped both worlds. This expanded mythology adds depth to the supernatural elements of the story, suggesting a complex hidden world existing alongside the human one. The revelation that werewolves are actually cursed beings from another realm rather than humans who transform introduces moral complexity. Are they victims of an ancient punishment or dangerous predators? The truth, Jared suggests, lies somewhere in between. Their curse forces them to transform with the moon's pull, but their nature as Endurans gives them strength, speed, and longevity that humans can only dream of. The supernatural world comes with its own intricate hierarchy and rules. Jared's uncle Ryland serves as the pack alpha, a massive, intimidating man with a jagged facial scar that runs from temple to jaw, who immediately makes Allie uncomfortable. His mere presence seems to fill the room with tension, and even Jared's usually confident demeanor shifts in his presence. When he discovers her presence at the cabin, he's furious, calling it a violation of the most sacred rules. The pack's survival depends on secrecy, he thunders, generations of careful hiding undone by Jared's carelessness. He ominously orders Jared to ensure she'll be there at midday tomorrow to fix their mistake, words that carry unspoken threat. This encounter introduces the complex web of pack politics and the potential consequences of Allie's knowledge about werewolves. The tension between individual wolves like Jared and Clay and their alpha Ryland hints at deeper conflicts within the pack structure. Some younger wolves chafe against ancient traditions and secrecy, while others, like Ryland, see these rules as vital to their survival. These conflicts inevitably draw Allie deeper into their world, forcing her to navigate not just her feelings for Jared, but the dangerous politics of a supernatural society she barely understands. Just as Allie begins to adjust to her new understanding of reality, her past catches up with her. Feeling threatened by Ryland's ominous demand to fix their mistake, she attempts to flee in the night, only to encounter Devin at the remains of her hunting blind. With glowing green eyes and elongating canines, he reveals himself as a werewolf too, claiming she is his fated mate. Devin knocks Allie unconscious and imprisons her in what he calls a moon room, a cave-like space where she's chained to a stone wall by a rusted manacle. He explains that during the upcoming full moon in 2 days, she will undergo her first shift. Despite her defiance, Devin insists on building his own pack, using her as part of his revenge against Ryland, who had cast him out. The captivity scenes reveal Devin's true nature, not just abusive, but obsessively controlling. He drugs Allie's food and water to keep her compliant, ranting about how she smelled like someone else and how she was his mate and would soon bear his scent. His possessiveness has taken on a supernatural dimension, making him even more dangerous than before. In a display of remarkable resilience and determination, Allie manages to escape by breaking her own thumb to slip her hand free from the manacle. With her injured hand clutched to her chest, she staggers through a tunnel until she finds an exit blocked by a heavy stone door. Using her legs to push against it, she finally emerges onto a mountain ledge under the night sky, gasping at the fresh air. Her escape demonstrates the core strength that has allowed her to survive alone for so long, a refusal to surrender even in the most desperate circumstances. Her father's voice echoes in her mind, "Pick your ass up, Allie Grace, and keep going." This mantra has carried her through homelessness, abuse, and now kidnapping, reflecting an indomitable spirit that refuses to be broken. Despite Allie's valiant escape attempt, Devin recaptures her, and the inevitable happens. She transforms into a wolf. The process is excruciating, her bones snapping one by one until the pain suddenly stops in a blinding flash of white. She finds herself on four paws, her breath clouding before a jet-black snout. Unlike the mindless beast of movie werewolves, Allie retains her rational thoughts, though she struggles to control her animal urges. The transformation scene marks a pivotal moment in Allie's journey. She is no longer merely a witness to the supernatural world, but has become part of it. Her identity, already fragmented by trauma and loss, must now expand to incorporate this new reality of being both human and wolf. When Jared, Clay, and Ryland arrive to confront Devin, an unexpected development occurs. Meeting Jared's amber eyes, Allie feels her heart expand until she thinks it will burst. They howl together in haunting harmony as something settles into her bones. His voice fills her thoughts. Mate. Her wolf agrees instinctively. Then, incredibly, Clay's deep voice enters her mind with the same word. When their eyes lock, she feels the same breathless connection. The other wolves watch in disbelief. Two mates? Impossible. This unprecedented situation, having two potential mates, introduces a complex dynamic that challenges the established rules of the werewolf world. Overwhelmed by these connections and fighting against her wolf's chanting of mate, 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 Allie leaps over Clay's bowing form and flees into the night. No one follows as she runs, focusing only on the cold air in her lungs and the burn of her muscles. If she pretends it's all a dream, she can almost feel like she's flying, a thread of bliss in a tapestry of dread. Enough to keep going until she figures out how to live as something less than human. This final scene encapsulates the central tensions of Allie's journey, between human and wolf, between past and future, between isolation and connection. Having spent so long believing herself unworthy of love, she now faces not one, but two potential mates. The question remains whether she can overcome her self-loathing to accept these bonds, or if she'll continue running from connection as she has throughout her life. Throughout her journey, Allie has maintained a complex web of deception, lying to school authorities about her living situation, to her friends about her relationship with Jared, and even to herself about her worth and culpability in past tragedies. These layers of falsehood have become a protective shell, shielding her from vulnerability, but also preventing genuine connection. When her friend Viv corners her in the hallway, demanding to know why she's limping, Allie lies about falling off the bus steps and shows her scrapes as evidence. Though Viv doesn't believe her, Allie promises to explain later and rushes off. Similarly, when questioned about arriving at school with Jared, she claims he merely saw her walking and offered a ride. These deceptions extend to authority figures as well. She lies to her Uncle Tim during a phone call, claiming to be sick and missing school, While he mentions possibly coming home for Christmas, a visit she doubts will actually happen. The ease with which she maintains these falsehoods suggests long practice at hiding her true circumstances. Yet alongside these necessary lies exists a deeper deception, the stories Allie tells herself about her own worth and responsibility. She believes she killed both her parents and someone else before she was even born, a burden of guilt that shapes her entire self-concept. This perceived culpability makes her accept mistreatment as deserved punishment rather than recognizing it as injustice. The supernatural revelation forces Allie to confront these layers of deception. As she discovers the truth about werewolves, she must also begin questioning other truths she's accepted without examination, particularly her belief in her own inherent badness. The appearance of an elderly blind woman who cryptically says, "You were two once," suggests there may be aspects of Allie's past she doesn't fully understand, dimensions of her identity yet to be revealed. This journey towards self-discovery parallels her physical transformation into a wolf. Both processes involve shedding old limitations and embracing new possibilities, painful though the transition may be. As she runs through the forest in wolf form at the story's conclusion, she experiences a moment of pure freedom, a thread of bliss in a tapestry of dread. This glimpse of joy suggests that accepting her true nature, both human and wolf, might offer healing for her fractured sense of self. As Allie flees into the night in her new wolf form, the story ends on a note of both uncertainty and possibility. Having discovered she has not one but two potential mates, an unprecedented situation in werewolf society, she chooses to run rather than face the implications of these connections. Yet this flight isn't merely escape, it's also movement towards something new, a first step on an uncharted path. Throughout her ordeal, Allie has demonstrated remarkable resilience. From surviving homelessness after her father's death to escaping Devon's moonroom by breaking her own thumb, she repeatedly refuses to surrender to circumstances that would crush many others. This core strength suggests she will eventually find her way through this new supernatural reality, just as she navigated the human world alone. The dual mate bond with both Jared and Clay presents both challenge and opportunity. Having spent so long believing herself unworthy of love, she now faces not just acceptance, but profound connection with two individuals. This abundance of potential belonging stands in stark contrast to her previous isolation, offering a chance to heal old wounds if she can overcome her instinct to run from intimacy. Questions remain about the nature of this unusual bond and its implications for pack dynamics. Ryland's fury at finding Allie in the cabin and his ominous order to fix their mistake suggest knowledge of something special about her, perhaps related to the blind woman's cryptic comment that she was two once. These mysteries hint at deeper layers to Allie's identity yet to be revealed. As she runs through the forest, focusing on the cold air in her lungs and the burn of her muscles, Allie experiences a moment of pure physical presence, a respite from the emotional turmoil of her transformation and the maid bonds. This ability to find threads of joy, even in difficult circumstances, has sustained her throughout her ordeal and will likely continue to serve her as she navigates her new reality. The story concludes not with resolution, but with potential, for healing, for connection, for self-discovery. Allie's journey from homeless human to supernatural being with two potential mates represents not an ending, but a beginning, the first chapter in a longer saga of becoming. As she runs beneath the moon that triggered her transformation, she embodies both vulnerability and power, fear and freedom, human consciousness and wolf instinct, a living paradox learning to integrate seemingly irreconcilable aspects of herself into a new, more complete identity.